Hey everybody, welcome to Stage Voices. I am your host, Matt, and today we are going to be talking to great, fantastic James P. Darvis. James is currently directing the show Good People at Onstage Playhouse, which we actually record from. That's right, we're recording straight from Onstage Playhouse, actually on the stage. So that was a lot of fun. We got to move some bits around, some sets, and do a little recording right then and there. So it is kind of weird because we are pointing to things and then talking about them and referring to lights that nobody sees in a podcast because it's a podcast. But I assure you, they are there and we were there. And James was an utter delight. I met him at the Aubrey's recently over the summer. And I really wanted to get this podcast in, do this interview, because I've heard such great things about him. So I'm really excited about this one. And before we get there, though, we do have a couple of things I want to tell you about. So I was listening to one of the many great podcasts that we have on A Modern Profession podcast network. So by the way, yes, this is a Modern Profession podcast. We are on amodernprofession.com with tons of other great podcasts. Or you could, if you want to check out the Twitter and see what's going on the Twitter world, you can visit at amodernpro at Twitter. Great stuff. But they also have a lot of great live events as well. I think some of them have passed recently, so that doesn't really help you out. I apologize for that. But if you go to amodernprofession.com, you won't miss the boat. Yeah, boats. So this podcast I was listening to, it's a couple of friends of mine who have a podcast called Life Moves Pretty Fast. Not to be confused with Life's a Binge, another life-based podcast, where they just talk about generally whatever. With Mike and BJ. Now, these guys are a lot of fun to listen to. They have a lot of great stories, and it's really fun, super entertaining just to hear them talk about life. In this particular last podcast that I listened to, they're talking about addiction, and one of the gents on the podcast is giving up smoking. And so it was fun to tune in and see how that's going. Which that seems like that can always be a little bit bumpy, especially in the attitude realm. So I saw him the other day at work, and I did not approach him because I was like, this might be a bad day. And I corroborated that with somebody else at work, and they said, yeah, today's kind of a bad day. So, you know, that podcast was very informative for me, just so I could keep all my teeth in my mouth, if you know what I'm saying. Okay, so go ahead and check out Life Moves Pretty Fast on amodernprofession.com. So another thing I'd like to address to all you fine people out there is you may have noticed that we changed our theme song. In the past, the theme song has kind of changed. Today I was looking for a great one, and then I was like, all right, I'll just land on this Lupe Fiasco song, The Show Goes On. But I did not have one to call my own permanently. Lo and behold, my good friend, Mark Matamoros, had he's a wizard at just making up some fat beats. Yeah, I reached out to Mark, and he was so cool about volunteering his time and making me some a sweet, sweet song for this podcast. Not just me, this podcast, which is me, so I guess kind of yes. Anyway, so thank you so much, Mark Matamoros. He's working on a site right now, so once he gets that up, then I will definitely link it to my page so you can go and listen to all his sweet, fun, fat beats that he does. I know he works with a lot of people locally. I'd like to get him on the podcast, actually. That would be worth it. But yeah, he does a lot for the music scene here. So that is what you're hearing, the great musical designs of Mark Matamoros. Anyway, with that said, here we go. Let's talk to James P. Darvis here on Stage Voices. Stage Voices. Stage Voices. and welcome to Stage Voices. Today, we are here with James P. Darvis.
That's me.
That's you. Is the whole name? Is that like...
Yeah, that's how I do it.
That's how you do it. Yes. Awesome. I like it.
Thanks.
Got the three names in there. It's important.
It makes me more important than people with two names.
Exactly. Always.
See?
So I've heard a lot about you.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
Mainly from your work in The Fringe.
All right.
Yeah, people working with you.
Cool.
For Believe No Repeat.
That's a dang good show.
Yes. Yes. And also Good People.
Yeah.
It's really interesting because we had Rihanna on the show not too long ago, and I still talk with her, and you know, she'll come back after rehearsal and just talk about like how much you make her grow.
Oh, cool.
So
that's good to hear.
Yeah.
Okay.
And just like some of the stories that she tells is just like just about how you are really, really challenging people and all that, and just personal journeys making that.
Well, yeah, it has to be in order to do something authentically, that a situation that you haven't been in before. You have to be challenged to find the empathy. And so that's what I try to do with younger actors.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's just really cool watching you work today, just in this rehearsal setting,
mm-hmm.
because you're really pulling out some really, really good performances out of people.
Cool. That's good to hear.
Yeah, yeah.
You're the first person not affiliated with the production to come and get a little sneak peek.
Ooh, I feel special.
Well, good. I feel not bad because you just gave me a compliment and I like those.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, I just really feel, because I've directed a handful of things myself, but I'm always looking for people who, you know, are directing. And I think I took a directing class a while back that, yeah, it was all right.
I've never been in a class.
Yeah. The teacher was very hands-off, so it was just pretty much like, here's a script, and, you know, go off and see what happens, which, you know, sometimes you kind of need to be put through that fire.
Sure.
Yes.
I can agree with that.
But, yeah, sometimes it's also nice to have a little bit of, you know,
reference.
Structure. Yeah, it's like, right. Hey, this is how you do things.
Right. So. This is how it works.
So, yeah, this is why, like, I'll go to the places like this, or if I'm in a show and I'm just, like, watching the director, I'm like, wow, that person really laid into somebody and then got this out of them. That's
right.
Really, really cool.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I try not to really lay into them.
Yes.
I actually always start the process on a very, very friendly, kind, equal level.
Yeah.
Right? That's how we start. And then once they know that that's authentic, because anybody that wants to do a show that I'm involved in, I'm greatly, greatly grateful for.
Yeah.
And they have to know that from day one. And then I found, this is only the fourth show I've ever directed, so I'm
really?
Still learning.
Really?
Very much so. Once you show the people that are working on your art respect, they then tend to want to give you that same respect. I don't know if that's true, but that seems to be working out for me. So I never try to yell at anybody. As
yeah.
you were just watching, I do use some colorful language.
Yes. You kept some composure, though.
I tried.
Yeah.
I tried. So they know, actors know when something's not working.
Right.
They know that. I can see it in their faces while they're trying to make it work. So it doesn't help for me to say, that didn't work, you're doing a bad job, you're not listening to what I'm telling you. I have to figure out the best way to communicate with them. So when I sit down, I'll cast a show, and then the first week, I sit down one-on-one with each actor, and I ask them where they've studied, who they've studied with, what pieces of theater inspire them, and that lets me learn the vocabulary I need to communicate with them. Now, 9 times out of 10, I haven't studied anyone. I mean, I've studied Uta Hagen and Stanislavski. I just picked up those big-ass books and read them myself.
Oh, nice. So no official classes?
No. Oh, wow. Never. So if someone says Larry Moss, right?
Yeah.
He's great,
yeah.
Up in L.A.
Intend to Live.
Yes. I then have to go out and find Larry Moss's work and read it. So then I know the way that this actor expects me to communicate with them. So I do that with everybody.
Yeah.
And then I keep a little portfolio with each of their names on it. Like the first question I'll ask them is, do you work internally or externally? And based on that answer, I know where we're going to start. So I'll be like, give them a club foot, right? If you work externally, physically, in juxtaposition to emotionally. So I really try to do my homework with them before we get into like the team rehearsals when everybody's there. So everybody has already been shifted in the direction that I want them to be in. And they like that. They're like, hey, this guy's taking time to learn what it is I do. And then they tend to work really hard for me.
That's great.
I don't know.
Yeah, because there's the other part of it. I always was wondering if I was ever going to be any worth of a director myself, just because I was so afraid of conflict in the past and always wanted to be like, you know, the nice guy. So I would give notes probably like half-assedly.
Half-assedly? Is that a word?
Yeah.
I like it. I just learned that.
Yes. It's made it up right now.
Perfect.
Yes. I meant to say half-assed, and then acid came in there, so I don't know.
Okay. I get it. I like it. We just created a word.
We did. We really did. It's great. And then I just kind of started thinking, like, you know, as a performer, I really like to be taken care of, and I like that, like, kind of strong, like, get to the point.
Okay. Direct.
Yeah,
you direct. Like a direct, yes. Director.
So I just started to, I guess, lay in that.
Okay.
As a stage manager, learning some of that skill, we were taught rule with an iron fist in a glove, or in a velvet glove.
All right. Stage managers are weird.
Yeah.
So it's a whole different world.
Oh, yes.
They're so necessary,
yes.
And I love them, but they communicate more directly.
Yes.
I think so.
But I saw a little bit of that, like, especially like in your note session where you know, you had definitely these really, really striking goals that you needed to get to. You needed to communicate certain things.
Okay, yeah.
But you were also not, like, a dick about it.
No, I try to be, self-deprecating? Deprecating?
Yes,
one
yes.
One of those two things. Because these six people that I'm thankful enough to have telling this story seem to respond to that very well. They don't want me to hang myself from the rafters.
Right, right.
They don't ever want that to happen. So sometimes, and then... the one actor in particular, when I sat down and talked to him, he said, I need you to tell me exactly what you want me to do. That's the way that he works.
Yeah.
So I have to be like, stop waving your hands around. Stop putting your hands in your pockets. You know, do this, do that, do this. And then if I tell him to do it in the one scene, it carries over to the next. So it works.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's great to get to know your actors and to see what really they need. And that's, I think, a huge part of communication in general.
It is. And we're here, you know, in a quote-unquote community theater.
I
dislike that term because we're just doing theater like other people.
Yes, uncompensated theater.
Uncompensated theater. So you have, you know, a wide range of people coming out to do some of these shows, because what's great... what I think is great about the work that I choose to do, it's super contemporary, right?
Yeah.
It's new works. With my own company, which I have called the San Diego Play Company, which is a separate topic, we focus only on nurturing brand new plays, Belief No Repeat.
We nice.
Found and hired a young playwright who is 22 years old, who had written some political pieces. And I said, hey, I want to talk about terrorism. What do you think about that? And she wrote this beautiful play. And now she's a produced playwright who's been paid. That's freaking awesome. She's 22 years old, right?
Yeah.
So Good People was written in 2013. Super new play.
Yeah.
Right? So people, Kaylee, my Margie in the play, she's a disgustingly talented woman, right?
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, it's gross almost.
Yeah.
So once she learns her lines, it's going to be really gross. But right now, it's just moderately gross. but so I didn't know if she'd want to do this play.
Yeah.
And so I said, hey, did you ever, this was 8 months ago. I was like, hey, did you ever hear Good People? She's like, yeah, oh my gosh, I love that play. And I was like, great. I was like, well, read it again and tell me if you want to commit to 12 weeks of your life for maybe a cookie, or I'll bring them something like an opening night, like a box of candy or something. But
cake,
a big cake. And she said yes, because she was so driven by the material. I mean, the character is amazing. But so then you have that. She's been working for, I don't want to out her age, but I've been an actor for 30 years. She has to at least have been an actress for 30 years. So she's really good at what she does. And I didn't think she would say yes, and she said yes. But then I have actors that, Rihanna.
Yes.
She's phenomenal.
Oh, yeah.
But she's really green, right? I worked with her in Belief No Repeat, and literally the day I actually held the auditions here in this theater. And when she walked in, I had already signed on to do Good People, and I was like, oh, thank God, I don't have to worry about finding a Kate. I already found her. From the other audition. But so she, you know, is newer to the area, and she just wants to get her name out there, and she's probably going to a lot of auditions. But then, you know, sometimes you have to court people. So I don't like community theaters and quote-unquote community theater. It's just theater.
Well, I think that when people talk about community theater, they think of Waiting for Godot.
Oh
no, sorry, Waiting for Guffman.
Guffman is the movie, Waiting for Godot is the play.
Right, yes.
Or that freaking Lend Me the Tenor, or anything with like six doors that slam back and forth.
Yeah.
Or a Christmas play. Oh my gosh!
Well, now, I nailed Lend Me a Tenor. We did it here, I'll say that.
You did it here?
We did it here.
Okay, don't think I was in town then.
No.
No offense to anyone who loves Lend Me a Tenor. It's a great play. But, yeah, I think people don't think community theater can do new, challenging things.
And yeah.
I know for a fact that Onstage Playhouse is allowing me to do that. Last year I did Coyote on a Fence, which was a beautiful play that I never thought in a million years a community theater would say yes to. And they did. And then they said, hey, you didn't do a bad job at that. Would you like to come back and direct something else? And
I was nice.
Like, right, but it's not going to be Neil Simon or Woody Allen, which I love those two people too. However, I think there are new Woody Allens and Neil Simons, probably hundreds of thousands of them in dorm rooms writing plays.
Absolutely.
Today. So let's give them a chance. We know Woody Allen and Neil Simon knew what they were doing and know what they're doing. Let's find, Tom Smith at the University of Akron, who has written a play, and nobody will look at it because his name's not Allen or Simon.
Get away from the safe.
Yeah, of course. Why not?
Yeah.
I mean, it's art.
And I would think, too, that with community theaters, that would be the perfect place to do that, because if you are, you have to get the money in, but if you have a bigger theater here in San Diego, it's going to be more expensive. You have to pay everybody. You have to pay everybody a lot.
Right.
So if nobody comes and sees your show, then
it's over. The doors are closed.
Yeah.
And no one else will create in that space.
And I think that the community theater, especially the ACT group, it's like a network. So I feel like people are generally going to kind of see it anyway.
I think this past year, Coyote on a Fence was my first, I don't know what you call it, my first experience with them.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't really know what it was about. It's freaking cool. It's great that people support each other, and there's this little network, and they give out awards.
Oh, come yeah, on. It's fun.
Who doesn't want an award?
I know, right?
So they're a great group, and I think they're growing from, I mean, you and I were at the ceremony together.
Yeah.
I think there's like more people joining that. So I was familiar with the AACT.
I don't know what that is.
Which is what I thought this was, but it's not. So AACT is the national version of ACT.
Okay.
So I did a play downtown 2 years ago called I Am My Own Wife.
Nice.
Which is an amazing play. And I did it at the 10th Avenue Theater, kind of a self-produced type thing. Not myself, but a mentor of mine thought I should do this show. And then we came together to make it happen financially. And so a member of this ACT group called me a month after the show ended and asked if I would use that show to compete in their AACT festival to go to a national competition. And I was like, what is all this about? So there was a competition in Long Beach where three shows from this area went and performed, and I was lucky enough to win, quote unquote, that. And then we traveled to Flagstaff, Arizona for the regional, and I was lucky enough to win that. And then we went to Grand Rapids, Michigan for the national competition, the 8 shows in the nation, the 12 shows in the nation that were picked to come and compete with each other. And I won Outstanding Performer, and our show took second place. But so I thought this ACT was the same as that AACT. They're not.
No,
that was a real long story. Yeah. It was boring.
No, that's great. So I Am My Own Wife. How did you pick that?
So I have this gentleman named Mark Zweifek, who is a mentor of mine. When I moved into town, I did a show at Scripps Ranch Theater and then auditioned for my second show. It was 6th and Penn or Compass at the time.
Compass?
The new Ion space.
Yeah.
And I got cast in a show. Shanley play, A Psychopathia Sexualis. And there's a character who is a psychiatrist, and this super weird guy was cast as the psychiatrist. And I was like, this guy is so weird. He's freaking me out. But we had scenes together. We were kind of a duo in the play. And he has so much knowledge and is such a nice person. We became very, very good friends. And fast forward a couple of years, I had done an audition for another local director, and he called me back, which was weird, and said, I can't use you for this, but I want to work with you in the very near future. They're great. They're super great because they don't have to do that. It's really appreciated. And then he also said, is there a piece of work that you're interested in doing? I need to sound smart enough, and I should have a couple things in my mind. And I said, well, you know, give me some time, and I'll call you back. So I hung up the phone, and then I called my mentor, Mark. And I was like, hey, this director wants to work with me, and he wants me to give a suggestion of what piece of work I could do. And he said, have you ever heard of I Am My Own Wife? And I was like, no, I have no idea what that is. At the time, I was living with someone who had his own production company. And in the corner of the living room was a large bookcase with a bunch of scripts on it. And I happened to wander past it. And there, on like the third level, was I Am My Own Wife. And I picked it up. I had to go to work in like a half hour. And I sat on the edge of my bed and I read the first 2 pages. Wow, what is this? This is a really great story. But then I had to go serve tacos because that's what I do to pay the rent. And so I went to serve tacos, and the whole time I'm like, who is this person? Who is this person that, because I didn't know that it was based on fact, right? I just picked up a book. And then I did some research while I was at work, and I found out that it was a real person. And I came back home and I read the whole play, and I wasn't thinking at the time that it was just one actor performing the play.
Yeah, that's a trip, isn't it?
When I was reading it, I was like, this is great, but there's so many actors in this play. And then my friend was like, no, it's just one actor. I was like, holy, you know what? I can't do that. And he's like, James, of course you can do that. And I was like, I think you think I have bigger shoes than I actually do. And he said, no, but suggest it to the other director. So the day before I was calling the other director, my friend Mark called me back and he said, you know what? I don't want to let somebody else produce you in that show. I want to do it myself. And I was like, what? I serve tacos. I don't have any money. No, we can figure it out. So we did. We figured it out. And it was a great experience. But it was a long... I ended up performing it for about 2 years with the six-week run that I did here and then all the subsequent competitions.
2 years. That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a big run.
It is a big run. And then in rehearsals and like going back to rehearsals and then at the national competition, those three competitions, you can only perform for an hour. So then you have to take like Doug Wright's work, which is amazing. Yeah, I always said it was like looking at my fingers and figuring out which three I want to cut off. Because you could only perform for an hour. So then you have to condense it and then obviously get back into the rehearsal process again. And yeah, so Mark Zweifach, met him at Compass, changed my life.
Wow.
And I have an award. I have three of them.
That's great.
With my name on them.
So how did you get into to doing that that show with all those characters?
How did I prepare?
Yeah, how did you prepare? Was it a big trial? Was it difficult?
It wasn't. I found the right people. I found a German, a friend of mine who happened to, like, you know when you don't know everything about your friends and then you're talking to another friend and you're like, holy Moses, I have to speak German, lot of it. And they're like, well, aren't you friends with this person? He's like member of the Californian German Association. And I was like, what? So I called him and he helped me with the actual words. And then there's a beautiful woman named Annie Hinton. I don't know if you're familiar with her.
No.
Super talented actress and director in town. And she's a dialect coach.
Oh, great.
So I hooked up with her. Because in the show, there's German, Russian, Arabic, French, American, Southern American, Midwestern. There's so many. Japanese. So I had to learn all these things. And then I was like, well, hey, I should probably... This Charlotte von Malsdorf, who the show is about, she had written her own book and then produced her own documentary. So I watched those. I read the book and I watched the documentary. And I remember sitting with my director, Mark, and our other producer, Elaine, and we watched this documentary called I Am My Own Woman.
Oh, okay.
And I watched it, and I remember thinking, is this person maybe not the best person in the world? Because up to that point... you know, I was enamored with her because of her courage and, you know, she survived the Nazis and the Cold War and that's great. And then I remember thinking, well, hey, to survive those things, you may be faced with some choices that in today's world might be frowned upon.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to my mom, who I grew up on a pig farm in Ohio with beautiful parents, but no art in our house. My mom was a nurse, my dad was a steel worker, and we had a big farm with pigs and cows on it. And so I don't know where this came from, but they supported it wholeheartedly, right? Like, go do what you want to do.
So they weren't creatives?
No, not at all. Not in the least.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, my mom was good with, well my, like crafts and stuff, creative that way, but not with words.
Oh, okay.
Right. So I remember calling my mom, very real human being, super real. I get a lot of my mannerisms and perspective from her, but I was like, Mom, my producer and my director think that this person is like the greatest person in the world. And I think, you know, maybe she's a big fat liar. And my mom's like, well, James, so what was the alternative for this person? And I was like, well, what do you mean? It's like, what would have happened if she didn't do these things? And I was like, I don't know. She's like, she would have been burned in an oven. Think about that. Think about how you've never had to make a choice that way. And then I found like the humanity of this person, right? Like she wasn't a villain anymore. She was a person that did what she needed to do to survive. And me, I'm artsy fartsy, right? I do all these plays and stuff. And the person that actually shined the light in my face was, you know, an LPN who learned how to inseminate pigs for her husband so we could eat pork all the time. Weird, right?
That's so weird.
I think it's weird.
It's funny, but it's great that there's like that light shined on you, that opened you up.
Yeah.
Like that way. It's so great.
There's been a lot of light shined on me. I'm appreciative of it, and I try to shine it back on other people.
That's great. So how did you get involved in all this? You've been acting for 30 years.
30 years.
And you grew up on a pig farm.
I did.
So how did all this start?
Okay. There was this beautiful little girl that I was enamored with in fifth grade.
Yeah.
Her name was Kirsten.
Kirsten.
And, you know, she had like a high ponytail. She was, and I just seemed to follow her around all the time on field trips. If her leg hurt, we were the two walking in the back. And I remember she came into Mrs. Roberts' fifth grade class and said, "My mommy's taking me to audition for a play." And I was like, "Well, I want to audition for a play." And she's like, "My mommy works at the Lorain Community Hospital." And I was like, "My mommy works at the Lorain Community Hospital too." So I came home from school that day and I said, "Mommy, Kirsten is auditioning for something called The Follies at the Lorain Community Hospital. I want to do it too." I remember my mom maybe rolling her eyes and saying, "All right, but if you get in this thing, you need to ask Kirsten's mom for rides back and forth," right? Because my mom worked third shift, my dad worked first shift, and then it flipped every week. And, you know, it wasn't, we weren't running to soccer practice and gymnastics and things like that. We were plowing fields and stuff. But my mom said, "If you get in it," I don't think she had any idea that I would. So I went and I sang a song over a cassette tape. And the director called me back and said, "I'd like you to sing." I'm a little kid, I'm eight.
Yeah.
"I'd like you to sing," "Beauty School Dropout from Greece."
Ooh.
And you're gonna be singing it with the ladies from the auxiliary board. And so they were all about 70 to 80 years old, and I was eight. And I was in this big, beautiful stage. My mom didn't get to come to rehearsals, right? She was working. My dad was working.
Yeah.
So my mom has no idea what's going on, right? And I'm in this beautiful theater called the Lorain Palace Theater. If you're ever in Lorain, Ohio, you have to go into it. It's one of the most beautiful theaters I've ever seen, and I'm so grateful that I got to, my seed got planted there. So it's this huge staircase and all these ladies with their backs to the audience in the little dryer things, you know what I mean?
Like yeah,
the
yeah,
seats. Yeah. And here I come singing Beauty School Dropout. I had a little leather jacket on. And
8 years old.
8 years old. A little white shirt and some jeans cuffed. And I sang it. And then as I sang it, you know, we turned these old ladies around and it was wonderful. But the best part, my mom, my grandmother, and my aunt came. My mother is so supportive of me. I think she's seen me in everything. Obviously, we're 2,600 miles away now, but she comes out and visits frequently, tries to get to every show. She still sends me the same note from that performance I did when I was eight. So the best part of the story is my mom had one of those little tape recorders that you took to like Spanish class and
stuff,
you know? I don't think they make them anymore, but
I used to have those when I started as a comic.
Yeah.
And I can't find them anymore because you have your iPhone.
Right. So this was the iPhone of the 80s.
Yes.
My mom, my grandmother, my aunt were in the audience, and I guess my mom snuck in the recorder to record whatever catastrophe her son was going to do. And it's probably the greatest thing that I still have. So she was recording it, and you can hear me start the song, and then you can't hear me anymore because my mother is sitting next to her sister and her mom, and she's just it just keeps saying, what does he do? Who is this kid? How did mom, that's my kid. That's my son. What is he doing? What is he doing? And it's like over and over and over. And it's the greatest flipping thing.
Wow.
That I've ever heard. I don't have a device to play it on anymore, but I still have the little tape. I've been carrying it around everywhere I've moved throughout the many years that I've been alive, but that's super great. Right.
That's awesome.
That's totally cool.
Yeah.
My mom is like A++ mom. She's
to be like vocally saying that.
Yeah. And not, you know, I mean, I look at it as she's with her sister and her mother.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like three ladies closely connected that it was all honesty.
Yeah.
You know, and it was pouring out of her. And
yeah.
So that's how I started doing it. And then, when I got into middle school and high school, you know, there were productions, and in high school, I auditioned for Play It Again, Sam, which oddly enough is playing here at Onstage Playhouse in the month of January, I think. I don't know. But so it was the first straight show I auditioned for, and I didn't get cast because I was a freshman.
Yeah.
I was one of the extras in the play, and then the actor who was the lead role, dropped out 2 weeks before the show. And in my school, thankfully I went to a school in a pretty affluent city.
Yeah.
So we all took, the seniors all took classes to whatever country they were studying language in the spring. And so all the rest of the cast with principal roles were seniors, and they were all in Italy and Greece and Spain. When this kid dropped out. So they asked me if I would do it, and they bring me this script, the Alan Felix characters on every single page of the script.
And oh, nice.
I remember sitting at my house, and I memorized it in 3 days. And
wow.
Then I was working, and then all these seniors came back, and they didn't like, they just wanted to quit right before they knew what had happened. And I went to rehearsal that night, and I guess did a really good job because I knew all my lines, and they were like, how is this happening? So then I auditioned for everything in Ohio and got cast in a lot of things and got to work with so many directors from all over. And then I moved here and I got to work with really, really good directors. My first director at Scripps Ranch Theater was amazing. Jim Caputo, you know who he is.
Oh, yeah.
He's great. And I wasn't going to act when I came to California. I was working on myself, making big life changes. That's how I got here.
When did you come to San Diego?
2008.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I came in 2008 and I was going to take a year. I'm in recovery from a substance and drug abuse.
Okay.
I've been sober since May 4th, 2008. Hence,
that's nice.
When I got to maybe Tennessee on my cross country drive.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Ran out of the, you know, great drugs I decided to take with me. And I got here and I was like, you got to figure out your life. You're a mess. And I had worked for a theater called the Shadowbox Theater in Willoughby, Ohio, ran by Ann Hedger, who's an amazing person. And my high school did a production of the play The Shadowbox.
Oh, yes.
And then I did The Shadowbox in Elyria, Ohio. When I was about 21, I played a young prostitute character. And so I remember I'd moved in with the new roommate, and I had nothing. I had a 2002 Kia Rio that the driver's side door didn't work. So all across the country, I had to climb. I'm 6'5". I don't know. People can't see me, obviously. So I had to climb out of that. That's all I had. But my roommate had a computer, and I went on it, and I just searched Audition San Diego, and I saw The Shadowbox, and I was like, why?
I can do that.
Well, no, I wasn't thinking right, and I was like, why is the Shadowbox Theater in Willoughby, Ohio, advertising auditions here in San Diego? And so it said Scripps Ranch Theater, Michael Christoph's The Shadowbox, and I was like, oh, I'm going to go do that. I don't know. I don't know anyone in this town. I have no idea. And so I went out, and you had to prepare a monologue not from the show. So I ran to the used bookstore and found, you know, those corny books like Best Monologues of 2008, 2009.
Oh, yes.
And I prepared something new, and I got to the audition, and the audition coordinator says, we are very behind. Can you just read this? And it's,
so you didn't even have to do your audition.
It was the monologue. Well, it was the monologue that I'd been doing in Cleveland for 9 years to get work.
Oh, yeah?
From the shadow box. So it was that scene. So I read it, and the director was great, and he asked me to come back. And then I came back the next day, and I got cast in the same role 10 years later, which made me feel great about my appearance, right?
Yes.
I was now 31.
You didn't age yourself out.
No, not at all. So, yeah, the ball just kept rolling, and yeah, I found this theater, Onstage Playhouse, which I'm super grateful for. I'm a board advisor for them now, which is a new position for me.
Nice.
So I'm trying to lend my help to them in any way, shape, or form that I can, because they've run a successful theater for over 30 years. That's amazing, right?
Yeah, right.
So I have this little baby company that's 2 years old. So in order to learn what to do, you watch someone that's been very successful. So while I'm learning, I'm donating my time, coming up with different programs for the theater and trying to do, bring in a little more contemporary work.
Yeah, and actually during the rehearsal in the break, smoking out in the alley, people were talking. They just brought up how, you were doing more shows here and there. Super excited that Onstage, brought you in to, do all these new shows, and that it's going in a great direction.
I was like, oh, wow. I think it is. And that's great that they said that.
Yeah. So that wasn't even, with you and standing in earshot.
They weren't even scared that I was going to do something mean to them. They were just being honest.
Yeah.
That's good to know.
So yeah, it's cool. Like,
can you come hang out at all the rehearsals I do and then report back to me? Great.
And that's a huge thing, is that I've just been hearing, more and more, great things about you and like your like work as a, right now a director.
Yeah, it's weird. Who ever thought that was going to happen? I didn't.
And I'm actually surprised to find that this is your fourth show.
It is.
You're directing.
It is my fourth show.
So what was the first show that you directed?
Burn This. Lanford Wilson. Beautiful play. Again, my mentor, Mark, saw a revival of it in LA and came back and said, James, you have to play the role of Larry and Burn This. And I was like, all right. So I got a copy of the play. At the time, I was doing a Charles Bush play called Vampire Lesbians of Sodom.
Oh.
Which is a very family-friendly piece. So I was doing that with a wonderful, beautiful soul named Jerry Pilato, who has his own theater company called Different Stages. And it was the first time I'd ever met him. So it was the first thing I was working on with him. And I remember coming out one day after I had read Burn This in a cincher, fishnets, high heels, and I hadn't put my blouse on yet. So I was running across the floor, and I said, Jerry, have you ever heard of this play? And I showed him it, and he said, yeah, I directed that show. He's a San Antonio transplant.
Oh, okay.
I directed that show in San Antonio twice in the early 90s. And I said, well, would you like to direct it again? Because I'd really like to be Larry. And he said, no. But why don't you direct it and I'll produce it? And I was like, I don't even know how to do that. And he's like, yes, you do. I can tell just from watching you in this thing. So Jerry Pilato put his money where his mouth was, and he totally funds his company by himself. Paid for a production of Burn This. At the time, it was at the Swedenborg Hall, which is gone.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I cast some people, and I learned a lot. I basically learned more of what not to do than what to do. So it was a very valuable
This can be the best sometimes.
Yeah, it was definitely the best. And we did that, and a lot of people liked it. Some people didn't, but what can you do? It's art. And then from that, Cat Theater, I don't know if you're familiar with them.
I'm not.
Wasn't at the time. It's called Community Actors Theater. Ran by a wonderful woman named Jenny Hamilton. But so somebody had seen Burn This and had signed on to direct a David Lindsay Abaire play, which is good people as a David Lindsay of Airplay, yeah, called The Rabbit Hole, which is a beautiful play.
That was, sometimes that's hard to watch.
It is hard to watch. I loved it, though.
And yeah, it's
he
great.
Said, hey, would you, I signed on to do this, but I can't. Would you do it for me? And I was like, I didn't know that's how it works, right? We should probably talk to the people that are producing it and see if they're okay with me doing it. And I was all nervous and had like three letters of reference and all this stuff to go. Yeah. And there was nothing. They were like, sure, you seem like a good person. Come on and do it. So I directed that piece, which I thought was beautiful. And I don't always think the stuff I'm involved in is beautiful. So
yes.
I'm not one of those type of people. But I thought it was beautiful. And then from there, Terry Brown, who's the artistic director here at Onstage, had this play called Coyote on a Fence. And she had been familiar with my work and said, I've been holding on to this for like 10 years. I didn't know if I could find the right person to do it, read it. And I read it. And it's a rough play. Their subject matter is very rough. It's about the death penalty.
Oh, okay.
Super racism. A lot of that there. But I read this play in one day, and there were tears on my face when I was over. And I remember calling Terry back, and she's like, did you read the play? And I said, I think it's one of the most beautiful pieces of theater I've ever read. And she was like, yes, you're the right person to do it. So they let me do it here. I had a 3-tier full prison on this small space. And
wow.
It was beautiful. My actors were beautiful. They were so tender, and they trusted me. And we told a story that a lot of people would find off-putting. And the majority, I'm sure some people did find it off-putting, but the majority of people said it was so filled with empathy. Empathy is kind of like my number one thing I try to, to get. And then those ACT people gave me a little statue for it
a couple weeks ago,
which is awesome, right? So yeah. Yeah, and then now I'm directing, I'm a liar face.
You're
this
a liar
the,
face?
This is the fifth show I've
directed.
Oh,
well.
Because I directed Belief No Repeat
at
the 2016 San Diego Fringe Festival, which was awesome. So yeah, this is the fifth show that I am directing.
So how is the Fringe, directing something from the Fringe, especially something that is brand new, how does that differ from like ordinary people or good people? I keep on calling the show Ordinary People.
Which and was like Bette Midler and right? And like
yeah,
the 80s,
I think so. Yeah.
Late 80s, early 90s. So here's the thing. Fringe is phenomenal.
Yeah.
So for a very small fee, you get to produce work in a festival where there's hundreds of other people producing work. They basically handle a lot of the marketing for you.
Yeah.
So it's a great, great deal, right? But herein lies the problem. It's new works.
Yeah.
So you have to create something. This is our second Fringe. I did the 2015 Fringe as well.
Oh, what'd you do there?
We did a piece called 12. It was a top 5 pick of the Fringe by the lovely Pat Lorner, who is amazing.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and it dealt with the 12-step program.
And oh, okay.
We studied, you met Kayla Millis tonight. He was my friend
yes,
that helped in the
yeah.
booth. He wrote it for us.
Oh, wow.
And so he took the story of 6 different addicts, gambling, overeating, narcotics, alcohol, hoarding, and sex addiction. So he explored one of these characters on 2 different steps of the 12-step program. So you met them on step 1, and then you got to check back in with them on like step 7.
Right.
Brilliant. Brilliant concept. So we did that super small, just the 3 of us. We're in that 3 of us played 2 characters each. One chair, that coat rack. I don't know where it is, but there's a coat rack that's here.
Somewhere there's a coat rack.
It was that coat rack. And that was it. 3 actors on a stage with a chair and a coat rack. And it was awesome.
Wow.
And then it's like summer camp for theater geeks. Yeah. Again, not being rude, I hope. I love geeks.
I always kind of thought it was like kind of like the Comic-Con of theater. It
is. And it's so addictive. Obviously, yeah. Big addict here. I would like threw myself into it. I think the first
year. Get your own badge. And you
just, oh, my Lord. And if you're an artist, you get to go to things for free if they're not sold out. So this year I burned myself out. Like I looked like I had black eyes and like my hair was falling out. I think I saw like in one weekend I saw like 25 pieces of art in three days. That's crazy. But so it's like summer camp and there's people from all over the world telling stories that they think are important because you're not going to create a story if you don't think it's important, right?
Right, right.
So you get all these different perspectives from different people. So then this year I was like, I want to do bigger and better work than we did last year. That's the goal, right?
Right, right.
You want to get bigger and better as you go. And while I was working on Coyote on a Fence here at Onstage, I had a assistant director named Bernardo Masson. I have something that's been in the back of my brain for a while to do a story about immigration. It's a pretty hot topic.
Yeah, right here. Definitely.
Actually everywhere, not just here. But so I had said, hey, do you know any young Hispanic playwrights that want to write a story? And he said, maybe. I'll give you a couple names. And then something super awful happened. I'm sure a lot of you remember the San Bernardino shootings.
Yeah, yeah.
That sucked. At the time I was living with a roommate and she was part of the company as well. And we were trying to figure out what we were going to do for Fringe. And she said, well, you know, those San Bernardino shooters had a daughter, a 6-month-old daughter. And they dropped her off at the grandparents' house before they did what they decided to do. I wonder what's going to happen to her. And I was like, wow, that's an interesting story. And I was like, well, I wonder what's going to happen to her in 20 years. I wonder who she's going to be, how this affects her future. And that roommate at the time was applying to be a foster parent. So she was very much involved in that. And we decided there would be a, let's tell a dual story of this girl. On this side of the stage, she is a product of foster care. And on this side of the stage, her aunt has adopted her, who is in real life trying to do that. We still don't know what's happened to her. And so Bernardo, I said, well, hey, do you know any young writers now? We don't need, you know, any ethnicity. Yeah. So my girlfriend writes some political pieces of theater. And I said, really? He said, yeah, she wrote a play about the Black Lives Matter movement. And I always say the name wrong. The young lady who moved from California to Oregon, she had a terminal illness and she was able to choose to end her own life.
Oh.
Dang nabbit. I always say Natalie Holloway. That's not true. That's the girl that went to like Cuba on spring break and has never come back. But anyways, so I was like, okay, well, she seems to like to dip her pen in stuff that might be considered a hot topic. And so I met this beautiful girl named Courtney Stagner at a coffee shop. And I said, hey, what do you think about this idea? Do you think you could write a play? And the thing that I loved most about her is there was zero hesitation. And she said, yes, I can write this play. And write it she did. She wrote a beautiful play. She did. So I fostered with her. I, again, don't have any formal education. So I kind of felt weird being kind of like a dramaturg and producer and all these hats that people pay a lot of money to get to put the hat on, right? They go to college and pay for that.
Oh, yeah. I was one of those.
Right. I wasn't. So we worked together and she would give a version and we would sit down and read it. And I'd say, well, what about this, 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 and this? She fixed it. And I have to say, it's a really profound, powerful piece of work. A young female playwright choosing to write about a religion that she's not a part of.
Yeah.
And doing that justice, doing the work to make sure things were accurate.
That's gotta be sensitive.
Yeah, it is sensitive. And so my company, San Diego Play Company, did a fundraiser this year called All Right, when we wanted, we had paid for a permit a couple of years back and it was about to expire and we didn't know what to do with it. And well, we should do a fundraiser. And okay, well, what would we do at the fundraiser? And I was like, you know, I got a lot of friends that write stuff. I'm gonna call 8 of them. Or email them, because that's what we do now.
Yeah.
Email them and say, hey, whatever you're writing on your desk right now, can you bring 5 minutes of it to Balboa Park on some day in April? If you need any actors, let me know. I'll find some actors. And so 8 beautifully talented people brought their work. And we debuted a scene that never made it into the final Belief No Repeat, but she brought a scene. So everybody read their 5 minute pieces, and then there was a talk back session. First of all, the author would say what their motivation was, why they chose to write it, and then the audience, which was filled with super cool writers in San Diego, ooh, who knew that was going to happen, asked really great questions. And Courtney went last because obviously she's the main draw. It's our company. It's our fundraiser. This is what we're doing. And I remember a very talented actress, writer friend of mine, raised her hand as soon as like it was question time. And she looked at this beautiful young lady and said, well, what gives you the right to tell this story? And I was like, no, she said the right thing. She said, I have done the work, I've done the research, and I have empathy for these people.
That's great.
I know what it feels. And I was like, all right, sister, get it done. And she got it done. And it's a work that I'm proud of. I'm waiting to hear back if we have gotten into the Tucson Fringe Festival. We applied for that. That happens in January. I'm not sure when the deadline is, so I'm hoping that we hear back within the next week or two, and then we'll be taking Belief No Repeat to the Tucson Fringe in January.
Oh, that's great. So what compelled you to start your own company?
A friend that wanted to start his own company.
Yeah.
So a friend of mine wanted to start his own theater company and asked me to be a part of it, and I was. And then when you start something new...
Yeah.
Sometimes there's some shaking involved and maybe one or two people, fall off the plate. Is that the right term?
Yeah, I'd say the plate or the,
So I kind of inherited it, through a group of friends, most of which who I, respect greatly today.
Yeah.
It just wasn't working out, I guess. And so now 2.5 years later, me and one other original person from that board are keeping this company afloat, little by little. And that's how that happened.
Oh, wow. That's great.
I tend to step in a lot of things.
That's how we get around in here, especially in this particular community.
Yeah.
Is that we just kind of step or trip over into other things.
And you're like, wow, look where I am. Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah, I can do this.
Exactly, yeah.
And then you say yes, and then if you don't know how to do it, you Wikipedia it and figure out a reference material, purchase it, read it, and then you're like, yeah, I know how to light a play. I bought a book on Google. I got it.
Exactly.
I need a gel.
That's what they're called now.
It's a lighting term.
Gel. And now they're having these crazy things called like LEDs that color change.
I don't know anything about them. But you know what? I dislike them.
They're not as warm.
I dislike them. I remember one of that Lorraine Palace Theater, the most beautiful theater I've ever been in. I remember laying on the floor as a fifth grader looking up and seeing those beautiful, I mean, they're the same lights that are in here, I think, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The cans and the barn doors and things like that. And I just loved it. And when I go to a play and I see that stupid, all the dots and stuff. but I guess they're more efficient, right?
Yeah. Well, and there is something about somebody making a whole plot and like, you know, these lights up here, there's one light focused with like an orange gel in it that goes right over here. And it's not a color changing one. And it doesn't move around. It's just like, that's all that light does.
That's what that does.
Yeah.
Chad Oakley, do you know that guy?
Oh, yeah.
Shut up.
I know, right?
He's like he's the greatest technical person I know. He's always number one on my list. I call and say, hey, Chad, you want to do another play of mine?
Oh, thankfully, he's so good.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
He is absolutely amazing and giving. Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, and it always surprises me. And I always respect these people who are so talented. And just like Chad, and he's just committing. And he volunteers his time.
Yeah.
And does these shows. And is just,
he has probably been in this theater every day for the past 2 weeks.
Wow.
Every single day. He's my set designer and my light designer. Because when you've got something that you work well with, you're like, hey, I remember I called him. I said, hey, do you want to design my set for good people? And he's like, sure. You also want to design my lights for good people? It's like, sure. So then I'm like, well, I don't got to worry about that shit. That's done.
Oh, yeah.
So I can concentrate on other things. But yeah, it's a whole different art. I don't really understand it.
Yeah.
I don't understand how you cross these things so shadows go away and things like that. But luckily, when you surround yourself with people that know how to do that, you don't really have to know how to do it.
And you just know what looks good. And you're like, eh.
Yeah.
I would like that to be less shadowy.
Exactly.
Yes.
Can you make that brighter? Can you make that dimmer?
Yeah.
Those are the things I say.
Oh, that's great.
It is great.
Yes. So, man. Well, this has been really, really great.
It has been great.
So, before we wrap this up here, I was just wondering, what is your whole philosophy on your art or what you do? What
is
your
method? The final question you give to everybody?
Yeah, this is the final question.
God, I wish I would have listened to one of your podcasts and I would have prepared. What is my philosophy on my art?
Yes, or your method on what you do.
I have to find a subject matter.
Yeah.
Or a piece of published work that punches me in the heart.
Wow.
I've never done a comedy. I want to see if I can do a comedy. And believe me, there's comedies that can punch you in the heart, obviously. But I like to do quiet things that can speak to a number of different people. Good people, for instance, is about love.
Yeah.
In my uneducated opinion. So I hope that reads well. But we have all had a first love, and that love stays with you forever. So I think there's 63 seats in here, and God willing, they'll be filled with people.
I'm sure.
I think each of them can relate and have empathy for Margie Walsh in this play. And that's what I try to do with all of the pieces that I choose. Empathy. I want to evoke empathy in a large audience that is diverse. That's my method to my madness. I don't think that even answers the question properly.
Oh, no, that's great.
That's what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
That's what I want to do.
I like it.
Cool.
It's wonderful. Do you have any plugs?
I've only plugged Good People probably about 17 times in the past. So, yeah, Good People at Onstage Playhouse, open September 2nd, www.onstageplayhouse.org. That might be wrong. It could be
OSP. I think
OSP.
It is. I visited that and it's like, nope, sorry. It was like something / info or Google
Onstage Playhouse, Chula Vista. Please buy a ticket. It's a great story and the actors are mind-blowing.
Yeah
I'll plug that. Who else is doing something? Anyone else I know doing something? I don't know.
Do you have anything up on the horizon?
I do, but I don't think I'm allowed to say anything yet.
Ooh, well, secret things.
It's secret things.
Ooh.
Yeah, there's two secret things. So no, I can't tell you about them because we have to wait for seasons to be announced, which I think happens September or October.
I thought the seasons were already...
Next season.
Oh, yeah. But Oh, well, I always think because the Aubrey's come around and that's like the end of like all the seasons that then they get announced.
It is. It's the end of the previous season, which is weird. So then we go through this whole season.
Oh, yeah.
And then the next year. So it would be the 2016-2017 season.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So yeah, listen and wait for me. And if anybody wants to ask me to direct something at another theater, I would love to do that.
That's awesome.
As long as it punches you in the heart.
Heart punching. Can we find you anywhere? Or do you want us to find you anywhere? That's probably the better question.
No, I want you to find me in a theater near you.
All right.
At some point. I'm James P. Darvis. You can obviously put that in Google and figure that shit out.
Pardon yes.
me. I tried not to cuss at all. I think I did it twice.
Oh, it is fine. I have an explicit rating on
that. I didn't know that. See, I thought... I'm
really?
Screaming at you. I thought you were not. I thought... Man, you heard my mouth at notes, right?
Yeah, I was surprised. And then you were saying things like frigging, and I was like...
I know, I thought you were someone that you're not. But now yes. I know, so...
Okay, well, I said dick earlier in the...
Okay.
So...
Well, I won't say what I told you the first time I met you about my other podcast, but maybe in the future I'll drop more F-bombs and be a little more racy.
All right.
Matt Warburton, is that your name, Warburton?
Yes.
Wart or war?
War.
War, like... What is
fight.
It
yeah.
good for?
Exactly.
Is that it?
Yes.
Okay. I think you're a pleasure, and I'm so glad that you reached out to me and asked me to do this.
Absolutely. Yes. Well, thank you so much, and it was fantastic talking with you.
Thank you.
All right. Wasn't that great, everybody? That guy is a talented, talented man. I definitely learned a lot. I say that about like everybody, but I definitely learned a lot just as a director from him. I really enjoy watching the just director's work, and I was so stoked that he let me sit in on that rehearsal that they had right before we recorded. So again, thank you so much, James, for sitting down with me and talking about your life, talking about what makes you tick, and that's the podcast, everybody. Once again, for more great podcasts like Life Moves Pretty Fast, and this one, go to amodernprofession.com. And if you want to go and check out Good People, that's going to be September 2nd through September 24th at Onstage Playhouse. And you can check out, get tickets and more information by going to onstageplayhouse.info. Once again, that's www.onstageplayhouse.info. And you can check out more episodes of this podcast by going to iTunes or Podomatic, looking at us up there. You can, or even go to our website, stagevoicespodcast.com, or on amodernprofession.com. Stage Voices is going to have everything on there. So stagevoicespodcast.com is going to have all the great links for that. And that, as we say... in the working world of sound and podcast is that. I've been Matt, and this has been Stage Voices.
Thank you for listening to A Modern Profession podcast. For more podcasts you might enjoy and information on live shows and how you can get involved, visit amodernprofession.com or check us out on Twitter @amodernpro or on Instagram @amodernprofession. Thank you. Good night.